You have been tuning into the Summer Membership Drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, John Nelson, Dave Johnson, Dejon, and Sam Bowman. Our producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Brian Bull, Alex Gonzalez, Isabel Charles, Mike Moen. Our evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K2HU Philomath at 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. I am Ron Bronson.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our summer fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
At the end of May, a flyer went out to homes and businesses in a small area of Northwest Portland inviting residents to a meet and greet at a neighborhood bar to talk about a new shelter being planned for the area. The shelter would be operated by Blanche House, an Old Town-based nonprofit that operates a kitchen, meal program, and two sober residential programs for men, in addition to a working farm in Yamhill County. The new shelter, called Bethany's Room, would serve female-identified guests and add 75 beds to the disproportionately small number of shelter spaces reserved for women in Multnomah County. The flyer and meet-and-greet event were first reported on by the Northwest Examiner neighborhood newspaper. When KBOO reached out to Blanche House for initial comment on the event, the nonprofit said the meet-and-greet event was intended to be reserved just for immediate neighbors of the proposed shelter. The event was held Saturday, May 31, at the Triple Lindy restaurant and bar across the street from the planned location of Bethany's Room facility at Northwest 17th and Lovejoy in a former bike shop. At the meeting, Blanche House Executive Director Scott Kerman, according to the Examiner, said that the event was supposed to be held at the site of the shelter, but the purchase of the site hadn't been completed yet. This prompted some in the audience of about 50 people to protest that the deal seemed to be as good as done before the neighborhood outreach process had even begun. The shelter opening and neighborhood response are both in the early stages. KBOO spoke recently with both Scott Kerman of Blanche House and Todd Zarnitz of the Northwest District Association about the project and how it has been received so far. I spoke last Thursday with Executive Director Kerman at the Blanche House facility in Old Town as people began to queue up for dinner. He started by talking about the namesake of Bethany's Room.
And it's named after a meal guest of us that we've known for a number of years here, and she was tragically killed hit by a car in the middle of the night last August, just off of Ankeny Alley. You know, we have known a lot of women who have been victimized, beatings, assaults, people who have been killed, and we just decided we need to find a way to provide them some safety and security at night. So we're going to open an overnight emergency shelter for women, for those who identify female, and provide them a place where they can close their eyes and not be afraid that they're going to be attacked or exploited or their belongings are going to be stolen.
How many beds do you expect to be available in this project, and where would you say that it kind of fits into the current shelter system in Portland?
Yeah, so we believe we're going to be able to sleep 75 women a night. And, you know, where does it fit in the current system? You know, first and foremost, this is a project to provide, you know, safety, security, and an opportunity for rest. But the other part of this is the opportunity to connect with other providers who are supporting women and those who identify in lots of important ways. But you have to understand, it's very difficult to work with these individuals when they have spent a night in terror and violence.
And you mentioned connections with other agencies. Do you expect to have support staff like wellness and like housing case management on site?
Yeah, we're in the initial plan, we're not going to have necessarily that type of staff on site. Again, this is an overnight operation. We're going to have staff there to keep everybody safe, but we're also going to be learning about the people who are coming to us, and so we're going to be intake. We'll have their name. We'll get some information about what other services they provide. We're going to encourage places to provide referrals to us, so that if Rose Haven provides referrals to their clients to come to Bethany's room, we've already got that connection established. And then, you know, we have our staff who do this work here on site at Blanchet House. And so we'll certainly be able to connect them to housing specialists and peer support and resource support that are on staff here in Old Town. And then, of course, you know, using active referrals to Rose Haven, TPI, Central City Concern, Bybee Lakes, so we can provide all of the other resources, make sure that they're connected.
You mentioned a few times it's an overnight program. So is that looking like a 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. sort of thing?
We haven't fixed the exact hours, but yes, that's probably in the neighborhood. I think one of the things that we're going to be taking a look at, and the shelter probably won't be able to open until October, because we've got permitting and other work that we have to do to get the shelter ready. So we have a lot of time to plan this. And part of it is understanding how does it fit into the matrix of other services. And so we want to be able to sort of open our doors at night and sort of close the program in the morning in the way that makes the best sense in terms of fitting what else might be available. So we want to be really flexible about the specific start and stop time, but you've pretty much got the gist of it.
Okay. Do you foresee expanding hours or going 24/7 at any time, or is this kind of strictly an overnight plan?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there is state law right now that actually provides for an easy permitting process to do this for overnight emergency shelter, but that does not allow for daytime programs. And so there is a chance that we could expand to daytime programs at some point in the future, but then that would involve a whole separate permit process plus whatever sort of build out and zone compliance, code compliance we'd have to do for that. So right now we're focusing on the overnight. We think that's a very important component of the continuum of care, and but certainly we know from our own work here, you know, we want to be open to opportunities down the road.
There's been pushback from the neighborhood, specifically some like housed folks in the neighborhood, a couple businesses, and the neighborhood association, sort of ostensibly around the outreach to them about these plans. I know there was a meeting at the Triple Lindy that got a little heated. Just in general, how would you respond to some of the issues that have been raised.
It's natural that people are going to have concerns, and we knew that going into this project. We've seen this with just about every other program that's been, you know, cited in our community over the past, you know, 3 to 4 years. I think most recently, Multnomah County's Deflection Center. This is happening with regards to the new sobering center that they're planning to open. And so community engagement was always an important part of this. And we do have 5 months to work with the neighbors and the community to listen intently to their fears and concerns, and give us an opportunity to talk to them about what can we do that would help allay some of those concerns. And an important piece of this is going to be the city of Portland. So we've been in close communication with Mayor Wilson, with his Portland Solutions team. We're not going to be getting any city funding. We're going to be funding this ourselves, but we fully expect the city to be a close partner. There's a lot that we can't really do as a private organization when it comes to a lot of the more significant concerns that people have with regards to crime, drug trafficking, sex trafficking that can occur around these programs. And so we're going to have to really rely and partner with the city to make sure that the neighborhood's concerns are going to be addressed, and that when there are issues, and there will be issues, of course, that we'll be able to respond to that, but we'll also be able to rely on the city's response.
And is there anything that you would like to add that we didn't get a chance to talk about?
It's always important to emphasize, if you're not close to this work, it's hard to fathom the violence, the horror, the terror, the trauma that women especially are subject to when they're unsheltered and homeless. And of course, this is exacerbated by the fact that many women who are homeless because they've already experienced terror and violence, abuse as a child or a teenager, domestic violence, other kinds of trafficking and exploitation, and they have fled to the street, mental health issues, substance abuse issues. And it's the street is violent for everybody who's homeless, but women are particularly vulnerable, especially to sexual crime, sexual exploitation, and other kinds of assault. And so this is really a critical life-saving project for us. We just feel a moral compulsion to do this work.
That was Scott Kerman, the executive director of Blanche House. Some in the neighborhood of the proposed location for the Bethany's Room shelter have pushed back on Blanche's plans and demanded more involvement in the planning process. That includes Todd Zarnitz of the Northwest District Association, who proposed some measures that would make the plans more palatable to the neighborhood organization. Those include zero-day camping tolerance and a 24/7 security contractor for a 3-block radius around the property, a point of contact for neighborhood complaints and concerns, no queuing allowed for services on public property and sidewalks, and a contractor hired to do daily cleanup in the area. I spoke with Zarnitz on Sunday in the KBOO studio about the neighborhood response to the shelter plan.
Can you talk a little bit about what the timeline has been as far as, I guess, either the district association or neighbors in the area finding out about this?
So what happened is we didn't know anything about it and still don't know much, and nobody ever reached out to us about, you know, sort of what the idea for this was. How the neighborhood learned about it is that Blanche House handed out some little flyers to some of the near neighbors and said, come meet your new neighbors. We're having a quick get together at a bar next door on sort of a random Saturday in a couple days. And, you know, and it went into a little bit of detail, like this is going to be a 75-person bed, low barrier facility. And, you know, I think these things have the potential, not done correctly or, you know, not done well, to be very disruptive in a number of different ways to the neighborhood. And so a lot of people were very concerned, reached out to us, and we knew nothing about it. And sort of from there, we've been trying to figure it all out, to be honest.
And then, so there was that meeting last Saturday, I believe, at the Triple Lindy Bar across the street. How were you present at that?
Yes.
How would you say that went?
I think the meeting itself was great, actually. You know, the executive director, Scott Kerman, ran through most of the meeting, and Scott's a great guy, just a lovely man. Everybody involved with the organization are all great, fantastic people. And I think the neighborhood's concern is not just with the good work that Blanchet House does, which nobody denies. It's what is the impact going to be on the neighborhood? And those are questions that are still very much unanswered.
It's come up a few times. There's other service providers in the neighborhood. What has your past experience been with siting, and how has that informed this experience?
Yeah, the Northwest District, I think people get the idea that it's some sort of hoity-toity, rich person's paradise of a neighborhood where, you know, I think people get that impression by, you know, going up to Northwest 23rd, and they have, you know, really great shops and restaurants and things, and then it sort of seems, you see the nice houses in the hills, and, you know, that has nothing, the hills have nothing to do with our neighborhood. Our neighborhood is a very diverse neighborhood with a lot of low-income housing and a lot of health and human services organizations already that, you know, have full support of the neighborhood. And have do their mission in a way that both respects the neighborhood, it keeps the neighborhood safe, and then also they're able to do really great work in helping people.
What would you like to see from Blanchet House, from the city, from the county, in terms of like outreach to the neighborhood? Like what could have made this go smoother?
I think if Blanchet House, you know, came to the neighborhood and said, hey, we're going to purchase this property, our mission is to help women and women in need, and you know, let's have a conversation about how in the context of the neighborhood we can best do that, the neighborhood would have full support, I can imagine. But that's not what happened. Basically, they're coming in saying, you know, we bought this building and this is what we're going to do. And when, you know, there's been significant pushback, you know, their response is like, I'm sorry, we haven't communicated enough. And communication in the context of the neighborhood means sort of we have a say about, you know, how a potentially dangerous project is going to affect the neighborhood. So, I mean, basically, we want to do our part. We absolutely respect and organizations that come to help people have our full support, as long as you're doing it in the context of not disrupting the neighborhood. And you know, our safety is not going to be sacrificed for whatever mission, no matter how noble you're bringing into the neighborhood.
And what dangers have folks either voiced to you, or what dangers do people see, like, specifically from a project like this?
I think how a lot of people still see this problem is a housing crisis. And it's not. It's a drug crisis. It's a drug addiction crisis, you know, and it's a fentanyl crisis, basically. You know, we have this really dangerous, cheap, very addictive drug that's destroying people's lives. And in that reality, they're losing their houses and they're out on the street. And so I think what we have is a failure to really see this problem as it is. And instead, we're looking at sort of a symptom of the problem, and that's sort of where the danger lies, because we're dealing with a very dangerous drug addiction that brings all kinds of safety and livability and all kinds of issues, and you know, that especially in this part of the neighborhood is what the people that live and work there have been experiencing over the past few years, and it seems to be getting worse, and if not worse, then definitely not any better.
In addition to Bethany's Room via Blanchet House, the city is working on opening a shelter, I believe, on Northwest Northrop and 14th, about?
Yeah. And so all of these things we've, you know, nobody ever approached the neighborhood about, like, you know, this, we have plans for this or that, or we're going to involve you in any of these discussions. It's just like, you know, this, we're dropping this in your neighborhood, and, you know, we really don't have time to hear what you think about it. And so that is what happened with the Blanchet House project. But, you know, the Blanchet project is a private project, or, you know, so that's how it's being, that's what they claim. And then the city, we just found out on Friday, is going to open a 200-bed facility about 500 feet away at 14th and Northrop. So all of a sudden, in a week span, we went from sort of living with this crisis, especially along I-405, which is a lot of this crisis is already concentrated, to say, you know, also we're going to focus, we're going to concentrate the problem with, you know, almost 300 beds right in this specific part of your neighborhood. The city has, I think the expectation from the city, you know, if they're going to bring this type of thing to any neighborhood, is that, well, you know, how do you mitigate the impacts, which is something that we've sort of asked of Blanchet House, and they don't, their answer is sort of like, I don't know, the city, I think will hopefully will help. And so, you know, as far as this 200 bed facility goes, the city has a webpage that goes into detail about, you know, what you can expect as services from the city to help mitigate the impact. And it's really nothing more than everybody currently has. I think any kind of community that's being asked to take on these challenges in a concentrated way, I think should expect more. And not because we're entitled to that. I think it's because, you know, we value our safety, and this is our neighborhood that we live and work in. And we understand that people need help, but that help has to be given in a way that isn't going to make a mess of our neighborhood. I think that I don't understand why we would be asked to do that, or anybody would. There is absolutely the sense that we want to help, but it can't be done at the expense of our safety and our security. Like, that's too much to ask out of anybody.
That was Todd Zarnitz, president of the Northwest District Association. In reference to Zarnitz's characterization of the causes of the homelessness crisis, I should point out that in an official sense, Portland's homelessness state of emergency was declared roughly 5 years prior to the onset of the current saturation of fentanyl in the drug supply. And many observers and experts continue to emphasize housing costs, availability, and policy as drivers of the homelessness crisis. KBOO will continue to report throughout the year on the opening of shelters like Bethany's Room and others as Mayor Wilson's plan to end unsheltered homelessness moves forward. For the KBOO Evening News, I'm Sam Bowman.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. Metropolitan Family Services is a nonprofit here in Portland that offers a variety of programs that aim to move beyond the limitations of poverty, inequity, and social isolation. This agency has been running for 75 years. One of the longest-standing programs, the Experience Corps, has been running for 30 years. This is a partnership with AARP. It's a program to support intergenerational connection and literacy learning. I am joined by the Community Engagement Coordinator, Maruska Lynch. What are some more of the values of this program in your experience?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the biggest thing is that you have a dedicated adult who is committed to coming and seeing you twice a week. That's there for you. That's so magical for our students, that there's someone else that's not part of their family, that's not a teacher, that takes time out of their day to come and sit with them. It gets to know them. You know, tutors start to know what kids love to read about, so they find those read aloud books to bring as the end of their session to read to the students after the students practiced and worked so hard. And, you know, whenever we're working on a skill like reading, it's hard. It's hard work. So having a champion there to help you practice those steps until you get really good at it, and then rewarding you with a great read to you that you love, is something special and something that really works. We see amazing results in our program. The program really works and helps students get closer to reading at their grade level.
I wonder if you have anything to say about, you know, how our culture is kind of maybe missing this piece of intergenerational relationships and how this could be addressing that?
Well, I think, you know, I think actually intergenerational relationships are magical. And we often find with our program that we all hunger for them. You know, there's something beautiful about learning from someone that's older, more experienced, has wisdom to share, time to share, and opposite, you know, our older adults learn from their kids all the time. You know, I have a tutor that was being taught a new word in a different language every time he met with a student. You know, they learn the new cool slang words. They learn about whatever the kid's interested in. Is it, you know, whether it's sharks or dance, you know, they'll chat about those things. So there really is, there's something special about those intergenerational relationships. I don't know about you, but my relationship with my grandmother was one of the most, you know, special, magical times. And some of our kids might not even have those relationships. Are there their grandparents live far away, or they might not have them anymore. And so that connection with somebody else, there is something really special there that I think would benefit all of us, because our tutors also feel like they're more part of the community. They feel like they have a purpose. They, you know, they get connections with other people from their own generation that are doing the same thing they are. So there's lots of friendships that blossom within our program between students and tutors, between the tutors and us. You know, I love all my tutors so much. It's such a wonderful thing to be able to support these awesome people that take time out of their day to participate in this. And I think the feeling is mutual. Our tutors love coming. They feel really engaged and really a part of the program, really an integral piece of our program and our organization. So it's just wonderful.
How was this program started? It's been around for 30 years, you said.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was started by Mark Friedman when he saw the magic of an intergenerational relationship. And it started just with a few grandmas that lived near the schools that were some of the first schools. And Portland was one of the first places where the program started. And at the beginning, they were connecting with students more broadly. And then they noticed that literacy is a big thing. The literacy support is something students need the most. So they thought, well, what if we combine that beautiful relationship mentorship with reading support? So really started building a session on the reading science, you know, how children learn how to read, bringing that into that intergenerational mentorship and building a really strong program.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking for more volunteers for the fall, is that right?
That's right. We're opening several new sites in the after-school space in both Gresham and Beaverton areas predominantly, and some East Portland schools. And we would love to engage more volunteers, especially from those communities, so that, you know, you don't have to commute far. And there's also something very wonderful when people volunteer from nearby, you know, when they're part of the community, and it makes their lives richer and goes beyond that volunteer mm-hmm. moment, you know.
Absolutely. So you're looking for people within the communities, ideally. What else do you look for in volunteers?
I'm sorry, the phone, it keeps cutting in and out, so I missed your question again.
Oh, I'm so sorry. My question was, what other qualifications do you look for in volunteers?
Really not much. You don't have to have an education background. You do need a high school diploma or GED, and, you know, a sense for kids wanting to hang out with students. A love of reading is really helpful. And the willingness to learn, because we're going to give you all the tools, We're going to give you the materials that you need, the training, and then the support throughout the year to check in, to see how things are going, to, you know, help with some of the things that you might be challenged with, to celebrate the things that are wonderful, and really support our tutors throughout the school year. So really what you need to come with is time and a willingness to learn.
Great. And what does a day working in this program look like?
Well, what it looks like, it looks a little bit different in the school day and the after school. We have a few school day spots at Davis Elementary in Gresham, but we have lots of space in our after school program. So a tutor would come in to the school and be there a little bit before they have their first session, just to settle in, to kind of connect with students, to help settle down. You know, often they'll be finishing recess and snack, you know, get their wiggles out after they've been in school for a long time. And then they'll get a student and they'll sit down with them and they'll have a moment of connection, of check-in. Then they'll take out the books they're working on, so leveled readers that are specifically designed to meet the kids where they're at. They'll practice really hard on a couple of pages, reading until they're super fluent and they've practiced all that they've sort of learned, putting it together in that session. Then they'll check in about comprehension. They'll talk a little bit about how that went, and then they'll do a read aloud with the students. And wrap it all up, maybe have a little chat and a little check-in, and then they'll get their next student. And we anticipate tutors having somewhere between 2 and 4 matches that they'll work with one-on-one. So they would see all those students.
This is Maseroth on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1970.